Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up from 8 to 8.30, talking all things NFL, so looking forward to that with him. We are scheduled to be joined by Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7. We are efforting him at the moment, so we'll hopefully have him coming up here in the next few minutes. Tennessee taking on Alabama this weekend, the third Saturday in October. Big game for the Vols this weekend. Big game for Alabama as well. Both teams with one loss on the season. So, I mean, this is effectively, based on history of the college football playoff, this is effectively a college football playoff elimination game coming up on Saturday between the Vols and Bama.
The great thing is next year when we have the much better 12-team playoff, it won't be.
See, I kind of like that it is a college football playoff elimination game on Saturday. Makes stakes pretty high.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
It's going to be great.
It'll be better. It'll be better in the future.
Tennessee had an 8.5-point dog on the road in this game against Alabama. We've gone through different aspects of this matchup. I do wonder, like, if Tennessee, if they're able to do this and they're able to go down there and pull this off and win this game on the road, that'd be two wins in a row over Alabama. That would be, I think, far and away the biggest marquee road win for Josh Heupel in his career, going down to Tuscaloosa and win. I mean, I know they went down to LSU and hammered LSU last year. This would be a different level, going down to Alabama and winning the game in that place. Like, if they're able to pull this off, what does this win mean for Heupel, this program, to beat Alabama 2 years in a row and to do this one on the road to win that game?
I mean, I think you could – it would be – you're not going to top last year and what it meant, but that would be a big, big win. I mean, it would be right up there in significance to me because, one, it means you've turned the season around when – I mean, after the Florida game, we were questioning, like, what's going to happen here with this team? And it doesn't guarantee anything moving forward, but that you are now you can actually look at – Georgia come into your place, and you might be able to get them in there with the East on the line, you know. But beyond that, to go beat Saban 2 years in a row, an Alabama team that, while flawed, is still loaded with talent, is still the most talented team in college football, if you go by the recruiting measurements, and a team that wants to beat you after you beat them last year, and you go into their place and win. That's a big one. Yeah, I think much bigger than, you know, like LSU last year ended up probably a better team than like Alabama is right now, but they weren't that at that point.
Right.
So, and this Alabama team has improved enough, even though they had the wobbly finish against Arkansas. I mean, they're back in the discussion. They're I mean, right now, they're still the favorite to win the West and be in the SEC title game and have a real chance to get into the college football playoff. No matter how many people who aren't Alabama fans hate the sound of that, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the driver's seat in the West right now. They've got the one loss to Texas. If you get through at the end of it and you've got one loss to Texas, especially if you go and win the SEC championship, you're in. I mean, they're going to get in the college football playoff. You know, they have gotten better. Like, I watched Alabama play, and I was watching the USF-Alabama game. I watched that whole thing, and they looked terrible.
Yeah.
Like, they looked like a bad football team. And, you know, Tennessee plays Florida later that day, and they looked terrible. So it's amazing, like, going from that day to this matchup now, I do think both teams have gotten better. Most of that improvement has come on the defensive side of the ball from both teams. So that's what makes this game so fascinating to me. I don't really know what to expect. Like, Alabama's an 8.5-point favorite. I'd say that's about right, given the fact that they're at home. I do think they're better than Tennessee is. But I don't know what to expect in this game. My gut tells me that it's going to be similar to the Texas A&M game for Tennessee, which is a lower-scoring game that comes down to the line of scrimmage that looks a little bit more like your traditional – line of scrimmage, run the ball, who can do it better type of game in the SEC. And, of course, like, you know, either Milroe or Milton is going to have to make some plays in this game to push their team over the top. I don't know who's more equipped to do it. I would probably lean Milroe. But, I mean, Milroe, even at times this year, has looked pretty bad throwing the football. Like, this has a chance, I think, to be kind of a slugfest out there in an ugly football game on Saturday.
I think so, too, except I think both teams can make big plays, and that's what it's going to come down to. I think like, 8-play, 75-yard, smooth drives to the end zone, I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. But Alabama, they'll go 3-and-out, 3-and-out, 3-and-out. 70-yard TD, you know, and Tennessee has that potential. Didn't see it last game, but, I mean, that offense, they got to figure out a way to connect downfield, and they got to take enough shots to give themselves a chance to connect downfield. Arm punt all day if you need to. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I would probably lean toward the under in a game like this. I think both defenses are going to get after both quarterbacks. The hard part – For Tennessee, you got to have rush lane integrity, and he's really good at getting out of that and extending plays, and he does keep his eyes downfield. But also, if he gets out of there, my gosh, is he a nightmare running the football for a defense. Joe Milton does not have good pocket feel and is very easy to sack if you get pressure.
If they win this game Saturday, and by they, I mean Tennessee, I'm going through the list in my head right now of, like, the exclusive list that Heupel would be on from Nick Saban's time at Alabama. Like, since Nick Saban has taken over as coach at Alabama, I would love to know how many people have beaten him 2 years in a row. I can think of one. You've got him twice in a row.
Yeah,
that's the only one I can think of. It may have happened more than that, but I think that's it.
Like, Kirby hasn't?
I don't think so.
No.
Like, I think he's been beaten – twice in a row by one guy, and that was Hugh Freeze. I have to go back and look and double check that, but Hugh Freeze is the only one coming to mind right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean it's also amazing that it's Hugh Freeze, you know. Yeah. But Spurrier. Okay, I'm reading this right now from Bleacher Report. Okay, so you're going way back. Okay, but Spurrier got him back when he was at LSU.
And right, but I'm just talking about it at Alabama.
At Alabama. Yeah. Yeah. And then Les Miles got him.
Okay. So there you go. Les Miles and Hugh Freeze.
Good old Les Miles.
There's your list.
Yeah. Which, yeah, two of the greatest of all time. And then Jimbo's the one of his assistants who beat him. Just absolute. There you go.
But that, like,
there's your Mount Rushmore of coaches right there.
Yeah. Jimbo, Les Miles, and Hugh Freeze. But I'm just saying, like, Alabama, they don't lose the same team row twice.
Yeah.
They just don't. So that's what you're facing if you're Tennessee on Saturday. And not that that has anything to do with this game specifically, but it just kind of underscores the challenge of what Tennessee has in front of them on Saturday.
I think it does have a little bit to do with it, because, you know, a place like Alabama and a coach like Saban, like, you're always looking, man. You're always looking for – I mean, Georgia's still out there like, oh, they picked us to go 5-7, and they're trying. I mean, they're trying to find their, you know, the slights and their little reason to get a little extra juice in a given week. But I think if you're a team that beat Alabama, and I mean, a whole bunch of those Alabama players were trudging off that field last year when Dixieland Delight's playing and cigar smoke is making it impossible to breathe. So those guys remember. So I think at least in this case, I think it does make it mean something. I would say, like, when Ole Miss beat them the second year in a row too, it's like, how the heck did you just lose? You know, that's all the talk in their locker room that week. We're not losing to Ole Miss 2 years in a row.
Right.
You know, so I think it does make it a little bit more difficult and make it a little bit more impressive if the Vols can actually get it done.
Yeah, and then there's the question that I have beyond the defensive part of this, and, you know, one of the defensive questions is, like, do we believe that it's for real? And we talked about that earlier this week. I think this is also going to be a big week to determine, like, can the Tennessee running game run the ball basically against anybody? And we went through the Florida game. It didn't go well against Florida. But now that they've started to figure some other things out with their team, can Tennessee run the ball well against Alabama? And by well, I mean, I think it's going to take, I don't know, 150, 175 yards on the ground for them to win this game. I just don't have confidence that Joe Milton throwing the ball 35, 40 times in this game is a path to them winning. So, like, can they run the ball enough and effectively enough to win this game on the road?
Yeah, well, I agree. I think 150 is I'd put it like get to that or better, and that's really good. But also, I think you got to have 200-plus passing yards from Joe Milton. And you know what? If that's a whole bunch of screens and two bombs give you 140 of the – okay.
Sure.
And if that leads to touchdowns, then that might be enough. But one way or the other, even if it's not super efficient, he's got to have production through the air. They've got to make some plays through the air. I don't see how they win because I just feel like Alabama is going to hit some of their own big plays. I think Tennessee will get plenty of stops in this game, and they'll get Milroe to the ground, but he's going to escape some too, and he's going to hit a couple shots, I think. I mean, the Tennessee secondary has been good.
I'm still not bought into the secondary.
Yeah, like it's still, yeah. I mean, even in the Texas A&M game, they got 13 points, so good. Yeah, it's a great job, but I mean, there was plenty of, like, Tamari McDonald got picked on quite a bit, those slot fades. And, you know, Kamal Haddon is a little bit of feast or famine. But on the road, you feel like, you know, there's probably a couple more plays that get made against those guys.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the Tennessee and Alabama matchup. What would it mean for the Vols if they could go down to Bama and beat them for the second consecutive season? Your thoughts on all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. Taking your thoughts on the Vols, 615-737-1025. Tennessee taking on Alabama on Saturday. Alabama at 6-1, Tennessee at 5-1. We'll take your thoughts on that matchup. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Joe, it's going to be interesting. You take a look at just the lead and the buildup heading into this game. There are going to be so many highlights on that CBS broadcast from last year's game with Hendon Hooker and Bryce Young in this quarterback duel and the way the game ended, 52-49. And then you look at the passing attack for both teams this year. It's just a very different looking matchup. I do want, like, if Joe Milton plays his A game, what does that look like? Because I don't know that we've seen a Joe Milton A game so far this year. You know, at some point, is that coming for Joe Milton? Is he capable of getting back to that? I don't know. I mean, it's last game was definitely not his A game. It may not have been a C game last game. The one thing he's got to make sure he does in this game is take care of the football. You got two picks against South Carolina, one of which was pretty bad. The other was, you know, a shot that I can live with. Last week's interception was just unacceptable. Like, you can't turn the ball over in the red zone the way that he did. So the one thing that I really like about him is it feels like he's got some pretty good mental toughness and like the ability to just kind of move on a little bit. But can you take what happened last week against a really good defense, flush it down the toilet, and find a way to just be better and a little bit more efficient this weekend? Like, the efficiency with him has got to go up. I mean, we talked about it heading into last week's game. They're 14th in the SEC in efficiency. At this point, I don't expect them to be like a good passing offense at any point. But can you be a little bit more efficient than they have been so far this year? Can you find a way to, whether it's scheming people open, whether it's calling some plays that you just haven't called so far, or whether it's leaning into something that you feel like Joe Milton does really well in the passing game? Like, Heupel's got to find a way to create a little bit more efficiency if Milton's going to be the quarterback.
Yeah, so I thought – so I guess – basically, his A game would be like the Orange Bowl. Now, it still wasn't great for a lot of the game. But that's after that game, I was like, okay, that's something to build on. And if that's, you know, whatever, that's like, that turns out to be his B game, you could see how he could be good next year.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's his A game. But two things, again, I mentioned yesterday, when you get to the red zone, can you get him to identify and throw a couple seeds like he did in that game,
right,
and rip a couple passes for touchdowns so that you don't have to settle for field goals? Okay, I know he can do that. The thing about Joe Milton is, again, he makes throws like across the field that you would not try with other quarterbacks, and he throws them accurately. Like, when he's throwing a slant, not always, I mean, he's missed too many, but for the most part, like those slants or those even just like bailout to the field side throws that are like you can put more juice on them than like just about anyone. For the most part, he throws them accurately, you know. So that's part of it, to me, is like leaning into that. But, yeah, I mean, in the Clemson game, he was trusted to make the decisions and the reads, and he made them, and he made the right throw, and then he made amazing throws. Where's that? Yeah. I haven't seen much of that. And, again, last game, I thought the deep ball he was throwing in that game looked very flat, and I was like, he has – you could tell for a lot of this season he has worked very hard to put more loft on it. And it's worked out, you know. I mean, he's connected on a few of them, or a few that he should have. But then in that game, it's like he regressed a little bit and went back to throwing that real flat deep ball that just you're just going to overthrow constantly. So I don't know where he is, but I'm with you. I mean, he's going to have to. To me, hit on a couple deep shots, and also when they get the red zone, can he make the right play and also avoid the mistake? I mean, he went forever without throwing a pick at all,
yeah.
And now all of a sudden he looks vulnerable to throwing a bad pick.
Cam on the text line says, the run game has been elite since Cooper Mays came back in. He wasn't playing against Florida. I'm sure it's a factor. Do you buy that Cooper Mays is making that big of a difference in the running game?
I mean,
the numbers would tell you he is, but.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to – I mean, it's one guy. It's a center. He's important. No question about it. I mean, the Florida game is the only game where they had any kind of issue, and I still don't understand how they had any kind of issue. But they didn't have him, so I mean, I suppose, you know. But they have run the ball in other, you know, in other games without Cooper Mays. Well, I mean, again, the scheme and the running backs alone make it hard for the opponent. But I'm sure Cooper Mays makes a difference.
Andrew from Dover says, didn't Joe say Milton would be a top draft prospect during the offseason? What happened, Joe? Roll Tide, roll. This is from Andrew from Dover on the text line.
Here's what I said, Andrew. I said he could be a top 10 pick or undrafted free agent.
You did.
I said I could see the entire range of possibilities. And right now I am zeroing in on the fifth round, which will make me $30 from Robbie Stanley. Robbie, you've gone the way of absolutely no one's touching this guy. I mean.
All I got to do is go six round or later. Then $30 is coming my way.
Yeah, that's true. I should have bet better on this. But, I mean, early. So what game was it? What game did he play well early this year?
Well, I mean, he looked good against Virginia.
Yeah.
And Ramel Keaton dropped a 75-yard touchdown pass.
So maybe that was it. But if you remember, Dane Brugler, our draft analyst at The Athletic, after I guess it was that game or some throw he made or something, and he tweeted, he could be a top 100 pick. Which even at the time, I think we were like, gosh, I mean, you can't be higher than that, Dane. And now it's like, I don't think Dane would say that. But again, that just shows you like the – I mean, we've talked to Charles Robinson about this, who we're going to have on at 8. I mean, there are people fascinated and intrigued by the skill set.
Sure.
But I think this year is hurting him a lot. I don't see how it wouldn't be hurting him because he just isn't putting it all together.
No. Jeff from Hendersonville says, seems like a pretty even matchup except for Tennessee runs the ball a lot better. They might have the edge. This is from Jeff from Hendersonville. What do you think about Tennessee having the edge? Like Alabama, I still think Alabama's defense is going to cause Tennessee some problems
game. Dallas Turner, they got studs all over the place. I mean, but Texas A&M does too.
The most disappointing part about Alabama, outside of the quarterback play, which has gotten better, has been the offensive line. Like, the offensive line was supposed to be a strength of this team, and it just hasn't been for Alabama. Now, can they figure it out? Like, obviously, they got the talent. They got 5 stars all over the offensive line.
They are young in spots.
They're very young.
Yeah.
Like, can they – is this the game where they figure it out, or is this a game where with Tennessee's strength and the front four that they have, is that the difference in the game? Because if that's the difference in the game on Tennessee's side, that could be your formula to winning right there, is shutting down what Alabama tries to do offensively just because they can't block you, whether that's with Barron or Pierce or whether that's up the middle.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be great against the run. You can't let them have their, traditional, tailback running game has to be shut down or really limited. And then again, you like rushing Milrow, it's so different because Alabama can rush Joe Milton and he's not going anywhere. And if Joe Milton on a design run or something like that, he can get going and he can be a threat. But if you get him in the pocket, he's not going anywhere. He's not sidestepping rush. He's not keeping his eyes downfield. You're sacking him. I mean, that's as big a difference between Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton as I think you could find. There's a lot of differences, but that's one big one. Milrow, he can kill you. Getting out of there. There's a huge difference in like how these two teams need to rush the opposing quarterback. But yeah, I mean, I think Tennessee's defense, if it can stop the run and put them in obvious passing situations and just, you know, again, keep them contained in that pocket, I think they're going to get plenty of stops Saturday.
Doug in Franklin says, is Tennessee too focused outside the numbers and neglecting to throw the ball to the middle of the field?
Oh, we've talked about it all year.
Yep.
But again, it's, you know, it's, you got the red zone pick and you got the pick against South Carolina where he goes to the middle of the field and throws a bit. I mean, I can't look at how their choices and not think that there's lack of trust from the coaches and Joe Milton. It's just, I mean, they'll never say it. Oh, operating at a high level. But they've taken whole chunks of the field away, and it would be great to see them try to exploit that a little bit. I mean, one of these days, just some crossing pattern, just some stuff to just mix it up a little bit. What could that do for this offense? But they do not feel – it doesn't seem like they're comfortable, them and or him, comfortable doing that.
Well, and I don't feel like that's something that's just going to change now. Like, is that – especially, I mean, given what's happened the last couple of times he's tried to do it, is that going to change right now heading into the Bama game? Probably not.
Sure. Maybe they've been vanilla until now. Maybe they've been vanilla until the Alabama game.
Yeah. I remember that discussion earlier this year
before
the Florida. Well, they've just been saving stuff. And you look at that Tennessee offense in the Florida game. Like, really?
Yeah, what were they saving?
Didn't look like they were saving a whole lot. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. More of your thoughts on Tennessee and Alabama. Coming up next, we've got the Rob Rant at 745. Charles Robinson from 8 to 830 talking all things NFL. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Make your silly underdog picks today for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app as we approach week 8 of college football, week 7 of the NFL. Silly underdog picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Also, make sure you tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. List your home with TJ to get your home seen, heard, and sold. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. 1025-1063 The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Tennessee and Alabama matchup. By the way, I'm scrolling around through Twitter, Joe, and I see something that Vince Ferrara just retweeted. This is from your favorite people at PFF.
Uh-oh.
The highest graded cornerbacks this season.
Oh,
at number one, Miles Jones from Duke, 90.7 grade. Number two, Sebastian Castro from Iowa, 90.4. Number three, TJ Tampa at Iowa State, 87.6. At number four, Kamal Haddon
from
Tennessee, 86.5.
Boom.
What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, PFF, you know, take it, leave it. I mostly leave it. It's, you know, there's some things about PFF that, you know, can be helpful. But I will say this: Kamal Haddon this year, atrocious tackle, you know, attempt in the Florida game, and he's gotten beat a couple times. He's made some plays. I don't think he's been bad.
I don't either. No. I mean, the bad was bad, right? Like the not tackling on the play, and then earlier in the year, like just begging and pleading with him to turn his head around and actually find the football.
Yep.
Seems like he's done that a little bit more, which has been good to see. But no, I think he's, especially the last three games, he's been pretty darn good out there for Tennessee.
The thing is, like, I remember last year, I think it was the Pitt game. And I think I came out of that game, so like Haddon's got to be one of their guys. I thought he was like really good in that game. And then, you know, he had his ups and downs. I just think sometimes he gets caught up in like talking and stuff, and it maybe hurts his game. He's talented. And obviously those grades are based, those are pure coverage grades, right? I think those are pure coverage grades. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they also are taking into account like tackling and stuff like that. And the thing is, too, he's actually usually a pretty physical corner. He comes up and he'll blow up a screen. That, you know, he'll get in the run game, but just on that play in Florida.
Except for one play.
It's just hard to, like, wipe that out of your head. You know?
I know.
I mean, to me, the weak – probably the weak point of this secondary is probably Jalen McCullough.
Yeah, it's not McCullough.
And he's still – and that's where it's like, man, is there nobody – because I think Wesley Walker's been good.
Yep.
I think that Danico Slaughter is absolutely a good corner. So they're not bad, but how about that? Come on ahead. And it was very cool. I said this already this week, but it was cool that Vols fans gave him this huge ovation when they put him up on the screen before this game. Because obviously he'd been booed before this. Just booed. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
He still won't talk. He won't talk to us.
Is that a
– We ask – and I'm not there every game, but the Vols beat – it's a request every game. He won't talk.
Is that a media thing, or is that he's mad at Tennessee fans thing?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Probably Wes.
Could be.
Let's rip Wes since Wes didn't come on our show today.
He did ditch us today.
Wake up, Wes!
Travis on the text line says, Robbie did say Milton was going to be a finalist in New York for the Heisman this year.
Oh,
I think I did say that in Call Your Shot Friday 1 week.
Busted.
Look, I'll eat it. I thought he was going to be a lot better than he has been. He's not been very good.
Yeah, I did too. I figured if I think I've said this too. If I had to bet, I think I was like, he'll probably be like a third round pick. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that was my guess. Like, he's not going to be one of the top guys because there are flaws in the game. I just don't know if they can fix him. But he'll be, you know, he's too talented to not be. But, yeah, I'm down on that. I'm fifth round.
Yeah, you are.
$30.
Well, we'll see. The receiving part of this, like, I think we know Squirrel White is a good player. I think we also know that Squirrel White probably going to receive a lot of attention on Saturday from the Alabama defensive backs. So is there somebody else that can make some plays down the field for you in the passing game? Like, look, Keaton has done it before.
Keaton is a very capable player. Look, think
but
of the
he can't catch
made.
The ball.
Well, make it harder for him.
I he's done it. Like, that's the thing. Like, I go back and I watch. He made some big plays in the Alabama game.
Oh,
last year.
Huge plays. Huge made plays a, in the Florida game.
The Florida game, he made one of the biggest plays of the game. Yeah. And that's like, we've seen him do it.
That's the guy.
That's what I can't figure out. At this point, like, it's got to be a little bit mental for him, right? Like, just he's dropping passes that your seventh grade middle school football receiver should be able to catch.
And before this season, I know that here and there that had happened, but for the most part, he really took some strides last season. So I thought that, hey, you're just going to take another step. I agree. I mean, I say he's the guy. I also do think all-name teamer Nimrod –
oh, man.
Looks okay out there.
Yeah, I agree.
So
got interfered with last week that did not get called, which could have been about a 45, 50-yard play.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is – we focus on Joe Milton, of course, and he has to be better. But this is the game where the receiving core collectively just has to take a huge step up.
No
I mean,
doubt.
You got to – and Squirrel White is – I just got to get – you got to get the ball in his
hands. They got to find different ways to get him the football.
Yeah, just get him the football. He will make plays in this game if you let him. So I think there's plenty of talent there, plenty of capability. It's been very disappointing. This is – this game and this stretch now, it's either got to pick up or I don't know if they're going to have enough to be able to put enough points on the board.
Ben on the text line says, I heard a debate on a podcast about who's more likely to make the playoffs, the Titans or the Vols? The college football playoff or the actual NFL playoffs?
I mean, obviously, it's not a debate going into the season. Well, although going into the season, some people thought Tennessee might be amazing. I mean, it's kind of funny. I'd still go Titans, but, you know, talk to me after this game. If
that's
the Vols win this game, then the Vols are absolutely a college football playoff contender.
Yeah. And then you've got Kentucky and Missouri and Georgia coming up. But.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you go win this game.
You beat Alabama, you're going to be favored against Kentucky and Missouri.
Yeah. If you go win this game, you should have all the confidence in the world that you can go into Kentucky. You should have confidence.
Not very good.
Kentucky's trash. Sorry if you're listening, Catterday.
Yeah.
But Missouri, nice season, and clearly they're better than Kentucky. But you should have plenty of confidence that you can now make that game against Georgia be for the SEC East.
Which, by the way, Brock Bowers, the timetable is 4 to 6 weeks. So, yeah, the tightrope surgery. We saw Tillman last year have the tightrope surgery, and he was never really right again after that. Now,
yeah,
everybody heals differently. So, I mean, Brock Bowers may be ready in 3 weeks. I have no idea. But the 4 to 6 weeks timetable is pretty interesting on the Brock Bowers front, because that could mean he's back for Tennessee. That could also mean that maybe he's still out nursing the injury. I have no idea. I have a suspicion of the way that's going to go. But
Yeah, he'll probably be back. But I'm glad that we can look forward to the Georgia game.
Yeah, let's just gloss right over Alabama. That'll be good. Well, a lot of people all over you talking about Milton being one of the best QB prospects.
You're
getting it today.
The thing is, I mean, I could, like, go the Jared route. Do we have to start going back and finding the audio and having the receipts? I mean, Adam yesterday even, like, was, like, contesting, you know.
What we,
like,
clearly,
like,
said.
Like, we had just said it. I'll say it again, Billy. I said that he could be a first-round pick or he could be an undrafted free agent. Right?
You did.
I can't, like, confirm. I could see the entire range. I said that so many times, and I can't. You know, I can't, but I understand right now. It's like, how could you ever suggest he could be a top pick? I'm sorry. We had Charles Robinson. We'll ask Charles Robinson again. That'll be something we'll ask Charles. Did anybody in the NFL ever think that Joe Milton was going to be a prospect? Because some people did. I'm sure didn't.
How much Joe Milton tape are you watching on a daily basis, Charles? In preparation for next year's draft.
Yeah,
sure you'd love that.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Looking elsewhere now.
What if Tennessee gets blown out in this game? What is that? I mean, you're going on the road to Alabama. It's not out of the realm of possibility that you could get blown out in this game. I mean, they got blown out by Florida. How disappointing would that be? How would that make you feel about the rest of the way for Tennessee here if they just get thumped on Saturday in Alabama?
It'd be extremely disappointing. And if you're getting thumped, that tells me that your defense is getting gashed. And so – then you really look at this team like, okay, so they're just good at home and not away from home. And they've only played one game in a hostile environment, and they were terrible. I think they've improved a lot, so I don't think, you know, I mean, I think they've improved a lot. But
it's kind of amazing. It's going to be October 21st, and they played one road game.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing. Now you got Kentucky, and they're not good, but now you got Missouri. You get blown out in this game, and you can quickly go very – you win, let's talk about the college football playoff. You lose, let's talk about
quarterback switch.
Yeah, quarterback switch for a 6-6 team.
Do you think if they lose this game, and especially if Milton plays poorly, that there's actual consideration to switching the quarterback after that?
I think possibly. You know, we actually, this was a question on Jared versus Joe yesterday that was not the predetermined question that predetermined that Jared would win. And it was about that switch. And I said, look, if it's bad, like Caroline asked the question, if they lose because of him.
Right.
If it's like everything else looks okay, they had a chance, but Joe was so bad. I think it comes down to, especially physically, how you feel Nico is, how ready you feel Nico is. Because this offensive line, better with Cooper in there, but it's not great. You know, their tackles aren't great. Their pass pro is not great. Wherever Ollie Lane is
a problem,
potentially an issue. So it's kind of, well, I mean, I guess you could take it to the Titans here too with, like, Will Levis. To me, you play him now, but that's because the starter's out. And I think if you feel like Nico is physically ready for it, then, yeah, it's not a terrible idea to get started on next year because you're out of the SEC East next loss you have.
Well, that's one part of it. Like, I wonder, clearly they don't think this now, but, like, Milton continues to play poorly. Does there reach a point, if you're hypo, beyond the getting Nico ready for next year, where you look at it and say, yeah, he gives us a better chance to win right now? Like, is that a
– could be.
Does that happen at some point? I don't know.
It could be, and if that's what you really think, then I think you have to do it. Look, there's a lot to this. Joe Milton did stick it out. Everybody made a huge deal of it. He's a leader in the program. I think he's the leader of the team. I think he's a emotional barometer for the team. And he stuck it out, and there's a certain level of kind of like we owe him because he came back, and you know, that is a big deal for them to have had him as a backup last year. Most coaches don't have a legit backup anymore in college football. But at some point, and so when you move on from him, you are further hurting him in the NFL and everything. So, like, those things are thought about if you're the coach. A human being deals with them on a daily basis. It's not as simple. We're not just all playing fantasy football cards, but – yeah, I mean, I think at some point, if you really believe that, you got to make the switch, and he's just going to have to take it and move on. I
go
do
the
think.
Combine.
What's that?
Go to the combine, launch one 95 yards, and
right,
people get over it
backwards.
Yeah,
like behind the back 80-yard pass. And everybody would be like, oh, my God. You can do the Patrick Mahomes stuff with him, but from his own 10.
Yes, yes.
First round pick.
We're back at it. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan this Saturday at 7 p.m. for our college football game of the week, Utah versus USC, presented by Twin Peaks. There could be some losses headed USC's way coming up. We'll see. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all the hottest college football games across the country and home of the 29-degree beer. Coming up next, it's time for the Rob Rant. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
No!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
They give me my money.
No. I said no.
No, I want my money. I
said no. I said no. Now get out of here.
Uh-oh. You went and did it. Oh, I might need that money tonight. I've never had pains like this before. Oh, this is the worst one I ever had, son. Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. I'm dying. You hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
Oh, yes, it's that time of the day.
Oh, is there more? I want to hear. I want the whole Sanford and Son episode.
That time of the day here on the Robbie and Rex Road program. Time for the Rob Rant. Shout out to Fred G. Sanford. I sent Nick this clip last night.
The absolute best.
I love that show, first off. I sent Nick this clip last night because it's the first thing that came to mind when I was reading this story that I saw floating around all over the internet yesterday. So, you know, Fred G. Sanford, for those who either are too young to have watched Sanford and Son or have forgotten about Sanford and Son.
TV Land, right?
TV Land.
It's all over the place. Yeah, you got to know Sanford.
It's beautiful. A great program.
Fred Lamont,
as they say. The best. And a lot of faking of heart attacks going on in that program.
Elizabeth!
I'm coming to see you, Elizabeth. So I'm reading a story yesterday, and this is all over the place, but I was reading it on oddityCentral.com. And the headline is this, Joe. Man fakes heart attack to avoid paying the bill at 20 restaurants. And I'll just read a couple of graphs here from this show. A Lithuanian man has been arrested in Spain after allegedly faking heart attacks at 20 restaurants around the country in order to avoid paying the bill. The unnamed 50-year-old man reportedly scammed at least 20 eateries, the majority of them in Spain's Costa Blanca region, by theatrically faking a heart attack. After ordering food and drinks, he would put on outrageous theatrical performances, clutching his chest, pretending to faint on the floor. The scam worked like a charm until one establishment owner saw right through the man's act and started other local restaurants' photos of him warning them not to fall for the heart attack routine. So this man finally gets arrested after faking heart attacks at 20 different restaurants around Spain. And it just got me thinking, like, think about how much effort goes into that. Like, the effort of having to act like you're dying and faking a heart attack 20 times. Like a message to the criminals of this world, some of which are very stupid, some of which are very smart. If you would put those efforts into being a productive member of society, think of what you could accomplish.
Boring.
Like, I get some of these, these spam calls sometimes that are like trying to scam me out of money. And like, for me, it's pretty easy to identify when they're a scam and when they're not. But I know for some people, like, especially like my grandparents fall for some of this stuff a lot.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, not good. Let's instead of being nefarious and try to get people out dishonestly out of their money, why don't you just put some of this skill set to being a productive member of society?
Wouldn't that be nice?
The faking of heart attacks is one I've not seen before in a restaurant.
I at least appreciate, like, that's old school. Because, yeah, I mean, a lot of criminal behavior now is just, right, I mean, just digital, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just pirate, you know. Pirating or whatever you call it.
That's a photo, you know, of this dude just sprawled out on the floor acting like he's passed out after this heart attack. It's amazing. It's,
you know, beautiful. What that brings to mind for me is another thing that everyone should watch, which is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I've not.
Oh, my God. Steve Martin. Anybody out there on the text line, give me some affirmation on this. But it's about con artists in Europe. And actually, kind of, they're not quite this, but there's some similar idea, okay, with some of this. So my question is, okay, so he does the heart attack stuff and everything. So wouldn't that normally prompt a call to, you know, paramedics?
Yeah, you would think.
So, like, does he, like, and then they're kind of looking around, then he just runs?
He just gets out of there. I don't know.
I mean, if you're going to do that, then why not just dine and dash?
I don't know.
I mean, you're not
bringing... You're thinking at some point, like, some medical attention would have been given to this man.
And also, you're drawing attention to yourself, so it's harder to sneak. You can't sneak out. Like, how does he pull this off?
It worked 19 times. Apparently, the 20th time was the charm in this one. But it does go on to say, after having tricked dozens of... restaurant employees with his fake heart attacks. The scammer may face his biggest challenge yet because the bills he usually tried to skip are relatively small, a few tens of euros. His crimes are considered minor. So the repercussions reflect that. Most of the time, he just spends a night behind bars, which he appears to be fine with. However, a number of restaurant owners plan to team up and file a joint complaint, which could land the man up to 2 years in jail.
Wow. That's a little harsh. I mean, it's stupid. Jeez. I really I need to know more about this. I need to know how he pulled it off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what I don't get from that part of it is, like, because the bills he usually tries to skip are small, a few tens of euros, his crimes are considered minor. So the repercussions reflect that. Most of the time he spends a night behind bars. So has he been caught doing this before? And now this is just like the culmination of
So that means that he has been caught before. And
then
he's like, I'm sorry.
I just got to keep doing it.
Yeah, he's just a fiend for faking heart attacks. Hey, man, people have fetishes, okay? Sean in the text line, whoever, you know, people have fetishes. So, I mean, maybe that's just his thing. It's where he gets his adrenaline is just from faking heart attacks.
So he's like a real life Fredgy Sanford. I've never seen anyone actually do this before. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's I'd like
he's
to
got
see.
His photo around
there's
like all these different
video,
restaurants.
Right?
There's got to be some video somewhere. Right? But there's apparently now there's like photos of this dude just plastered up in all these restaurants around Spain. Like, hey, do not serve this guy. If you see him, get him out. I mean, if he goes to, let's say it goes worst case scenario for this dude here and he goes to jail for 2 years. When he gets out, is he doing this again? We're going back at it? Because apparently he's been caught before and it hasn't helped.
I'm going to guess so. I mean,
this is just a sickness, this person.
Right, because, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to scam people. Again, dirty, rotten scoundrels, all kinds of different ways. And thank you for those of you who are who love that movie and are weighing in. But this must just be like his thing, right?
I guess so. Chip from Mount Juliet says, I had an uncle from Switzerland place cockroaches in food at restaurants. Carried them in a pool bottle, a childhood memory that you guys just brought back. A pill bottle. Typo there. So just bringing cockroaches with you to the restaurant and then putting them in your food, I guess, to eat for free.
Okay, I gotcha. Okay.
That's a lot of effort.
Yeah, that is. That's a lot of effort. That's kind of clever. Like, I think, to me, it's like
by the way, we do not condone any of these things.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not trying to
we
give tips.
We don't condone fake
heart
attacks.
We're not giving tips, okay? But... to me, can you do that with like a rubber cockroach? So then you don't actually have to have like a cockroach in your food, but then they think it is, and then they give you that's...
I don't know. I saw this story, and I was like, just think about the effort from this man to sit here and fake heart attacks all around Europe. And now he's going to jail, apparently. Tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Mike says, Joe does have a heart. 2 years is a little harsh.
That is a lot.
Lots of references to Oklahoma.
What does that mean?
You got to watch the movie. Rupricked.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought we were going somewhere with that.
Yeah, you got to watch the movie. Right. Sorry. I'm reading out.
615-737-1025. This has been the Rob Rant. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get into the Titans and all things NFL with him. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.